Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. With emphasis on that leading the Republic, this show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org as well as 1798part2.org as well as republicreview.org. You are listening to the only show that actually will shut down all the federal tyranny, and you're listening to the only show that will take away the wind in any of the communist sails, such as Antifa and all these protests and all these evil people that are trying to literally discard our Constitution. This is the only show that's talking about the only process, and this is the Thomas Jefferson, James Madison process that they used when the federal government violated the Constitution. So, anyway, this is the only show on air that is asserting the only constitutional problem. So with that, I would give you at this point in time our phone number, but our phone lines are still down, so I apologize. So this being a talk show, that means that I must talk and a little less interface, but that's okay. I am used to that, and I do realize that there's a few people that may not want to necessarily call in because they're still learning about the Constitution, or they just find it more informative and less motivated to call in. But either way, this show is dedicated to supporting those candidates, and I ask you to please support these candidates as well. These candidates need our help, and especially, and more specifically, the candidates that have signed the pledge of committing to protecting the Constitution and actually calling for the states to audit the Constitution. This is critical, folks. This is the only process. And so I beg, implore, and plead that if you would go online and go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, go to the candidates endorsement page, click on that, and go click and support all of the candidates that are on that page, especially the Wyoming candidates. The Washington candidate, Matt Hawkins, unfortunately, he has lost his primary to Susan Hutchinson. And so she will be the one running against Marie Cantwell for the U.S. Senate out of Washington State. But Taylor Haynes, Bill Winnie, Greg Flesvig, Clarence Stiver, and Carl Allred. I've got them memorized. And you know me, I'm bad with names. But all of those folks need your help. They need your endorsements. They need your contributions because it costs money to win a campaign. It costs money to run a campaign. It costs money to actually beat out those who are being bought out by Soros or by the status quo, by big government, by those folks out there that are literally trying to buy the best government for them, and to heck with you. It's about time, if you want to understand the importance of self-governance, the importance is literally supporting those candidates that will actually create an even playing field, that will actually support individual liberty and sovereignty, instead of supporting agendas and instead of supporting what serves them as well as a couple of their major investors. I mean, the spoil system and loyalties have to go away, and there's a process in doing that. But first, we've got to get the federal government into compliance. That's why we've got to get your support. We've got to get these guys some money so that they can have some advertising ability and power over the radio airwaves and so forth in Wyoming. So please help. The Republic is really dependent on everybody in getting involved and helping, because this is not just a one-person problem or a one-person crusade if we're going to save the Constitution. Unless you're really happy with the fact that, you know, we can grow the deep state and we can actually create a single world currency, single world government. I mean, that's okay if that's what you like. I myself prefer individual sovereignty and individual liberty, and I refuse to become a compelled, what do you want to call it, a compelled slave, a compelled slave of the state or whatever. Anyway, I am, and I have, I've kind of got it started on the process of delineating the layout. So I'm hoping to be able to get this crowdfunding set up so that you can start getting engaged and actually start having meaningful contributions so that we can put together our first event. Hopefully our first event will be January, going to a to the legislative offices and the assembly of the Wyoming state legislators, as well as possibly Idaho next year. And so those will be two great worthy causes of getting folks onto the floor and speaking to those legislators and educating them on their responsibility in calling for this audit and calling for Republic review. So with that being said, it's time to grovel a little bit. Let me just put my little tin cup out and say, don't give me money, give it to the candidates. And especially do not give money to me that you mean to give to the candidates. Like, it becomes a real nightmare for me to do that at this point until we get this crowdfunding and everything else set up. So with that, if you've got time, if you've got a phone, if you have a computer, then by all means, please contact me. It's info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And just let me know where you are and what and so forth, and we will start getting you connected. We will start at least giving you some content so that you can understand what you need to be doing. And it's not that hard. It is really actually pretty easy. And most people are reasonable. Most all of these politicians I reach out to, they're reasonable. Some of them, you know, just don't want to be committed, and maybe I consider that unreasonable, but actually I don't consider that unreasonable. I consider that the typical tactic of a politician. When you talk to a politician about getting committed, signing a pledge, and they choose not to do that, then that speaks to their tactics as a politician. In other words, you know, are they going to uphold their oath as well? Because do they mean to hold to what they state? Are they really putting some teeth behind their bite? Are they putting legs and standing up for those things that they say they're going to stand up for? Or are they basically just going to go, well, I'm going to do what's best for me and best for my constituents. I'm not looking for somebody doing something best for GR. I'm actually looking for somebody to do what's best for the Republic, period. And if anybody can prove me wrong, then fine. Then we will, you know, we'll ferret through that entire pile of whatever they're going to put out there. But I don't think anybody can prove me wrong. And so I think it's really important that we start holding our elected officials accountable, especially accountable to that oath that they have to take. And so, as I kind of mentioned yesterday, that there's been some stalling for time and trying to, you know, manipulate and dance around, but not getting committed. The only governor that was willing and quickly jumped onto committing to protect the Constitution is Taylor Haynes. I've really tried. I have been stalled. I get these excuses of I'm too busy from different campaigns. And so I'm actually going to go through these, the names and everything else. But I will just say this. Anybody that says that they're too busy, when somebody comes along and tells them that this is the process for saving the Constitution, and they don't even take the few minutes necessary to go through this content, then as far as I'm concerned, they lack the leadership skills to be able to actually take information and process it and go through it, because a leader acts upon things of that nature, period. Especially somebody that is asking to become an executive of a state or a state legislator. And if they don't understand the responsibility and authority that they possess as a state legislator or as a governor, then I think it maybe they need to, instead of being so busy, they may need to go back and probably study some of the founding documents and study a little bit more on these types of positions before they really pursue trying to fill these positions. They may be nice people, they may be decent servants, but it is time for leadership, not servants, because the question is, who are they serving? What we need are leaders that are going to take charge and actually step up as a good leader would in protecting the Constitution. Well, so as I always do, and before we kind of close out the segment, I want to let you know that I've actually scoured through the news. I have looked, and there is no sign whatsoever that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. And as always, I have to poke my finger in my own eye, as well as yours, and say, it's up to us. We have to do this. If we don't do this, it won't get done, because there is no nobility within the federal government. You may love Trump, but he does not have his, even if he possesses the nobility, he does not have the authority to do what needs to be done. Only the states possess that authority. That's what you've learned here academically. And that's why you need to go through my podcast, because I provided you irrefutable evidence from the ratification debates and so forth. And so, and I will continue to provide you irrefutable evidence that actually supports this whole concept and idea. Today, I'm hoping to get into these little nitinoid facts called the farewell address, when George Washington talks about the party and talks about the process of actually making changes to the Constitution, that we do it through the process and not through usurpation. But with that being said, I'm at that hard break, and it is time for me to give some time to our sponsors and a promo. And so please stay tuned, and we will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so let me get into some names, because those who I've actually talked to, and those who the campaigns have actually talked to, and those who have completely ignored, I won't say ignored, they did not get back with me regardless. And so the ones that I did not hear anything from at all, I mean, it's just like they have their own plan of how they want to win this election. And these are the governors in Wyoming. And that was fossil-free. So I got nothing, no blip or anything. I will say for Sam, there's a, I'm going to forget his name and I'm really bad, so I'll just go call him Sam. His campaign actually reached back. So they said, hey, we'd kind of like to have you on, we'd like to, you know, be on your show. But as I talked to them, I did not hear another peep from them. So there you go. So Sam and Foster, nothing. I actually spoke to on the phone the Mark Gordon camp, and I got a lot of, oh, yeah, and people were going to get back to me. They never did. They had no interest. I emailed them, nothing. And so out of those three, and in looking at their positions, I just do not see that they even care about really trying to protect and supporting the Constitution. I don't understand why they even want to run as a Republican, because I would think Republicans, at least in Wyoming, would take seriously that oath that the first thing they've got to do before they even become governor is they got to take an oath. And if they don't take that oath, and if they don't take that oath seriously, then seriously, Wyoming, why would you vote for either three of those, especially if they're not willing to protect your Constitution and protect you from your individual liberties and sovereignty? And so the one gentleman that I spoke to on the phone, Bill Dahlin, and we actually had him on the interview. I have not gotten back from him. As a matter of fact, it's kind of like been more of a dead silence. And in all fairness, I know he's on a shoestring budget and so forth, but still, I would have expected him to come back. He would have probably been able to get some wind in his sails if he would have, because he told me he was huge on the Constitution. And so I will leave it at that, because, I mean, if you're huge on the Constitution, and after I told him about Republic Review and so forth, you would have thunk. He would have said, you know what, I really want to hear more about this. And so let me move on to the next one, which was Harriet Hageman. She is the other Republican candidate in the primary that I spoke to, and as I clearly explained to her, Republic Review and this process gave her the content. And then I even followed up, because she actually has staff. I followed up with, I think it is her campaign chair, Trinity Lewis, or whoever's, you know, campaign manager, whatever. And I even spoke to Trinity. I sent her the information. I said, look, I'd like to see every single Republican in Wyoming that is running for governor commit to protecting the Constitution. I ask that you, you know, get Harriet to read this, look at this. This is the only process. And I had a very detailed conversation with Harriet as well as with Trinity, even more detailed with Trinity, and trying to emphasize the importance. And so I keep on getting, and Trinity just texted me back saying, well, Harriet's a little too busy. Well, you know what? Wyoming, if these candidates are just too busy to try to take the time to fathom how important and how big this and momentous this opportunity is to jump upon in saving the Constitution, then I have a problem trying to even support these people. I mean, go back to the drawing boards and figure out where you want to be. Do you want to be in the Republican Party, or do you want to be in the Democratic Party or some other obscure party that probably doesn't even have much representation? Huh? I don't know. I would think, and so Rex Rammel is over in the Constitution Party. I did talk to him. I actually spoke to him today. He is, because he's not in the primary, I think he's just trying to buy himself some time. But he says, you know, let me look at this, because he knows the primary is a week away. And if Taylor Haynes wins, there's no doubt in my mind he will sign that pledge, because he will feel boxed in. And I find it interesting of the political nature of people that, you know, they only will commit to something when somebody else is committed to it. Are you kidding me? Really? Where is the leadership, folks? Where's the leadership out of all of these candidates? It obviously is in Taylor Haynes. Taylor Haynes quickly jumped on this. He is a man that recognizes the peril this republic is in. And so I can't even emphasize enough how important it is to throw money at these leaders that are on that candidate endorsement page. So there you go. I'm kind of done going through all of that. And let's take it on a light note for a minute. Have you heard Bill Murray is being charged or has been accused of attacking somebody? I don't know if you ever watched, I don't think it was a David Letterman. I think it was one of these stupid late talk show liberals that he was on the show with. But I remember watching this, and it, actually it couldn't have been recently. It had to have been a little while ago. So maybe it was Jay Leno and not one of these liberals. These flaming progressive liberals that are out there just grinding an axe on communism and against liberty and so forth. But anywho, Bill Murray, in this interview, he actually admitted to running a guy down in Central Park really late at night. The guy was just minding his own business, and Bill Murray started running at him. So the guy started running away, and Bill Murray ran him down, tackled him, and then just basically accosted him, gave him purple nurples. And then the guy realized that it was Bill Murray, and he goes, "Yeah, that's right. It's me, Bill Murray. Go ahead and tell somebody that I ran you down and attacked you in Central Park, they won't believe you." And then he got up and left. And so maybe he's becoming a little too emboldened to, attacking people. And so maybe, he should have kind of learned, taken a lesson of just chilling or what have you. But anyway, let me kind of move forward. I did want to make a comment on this Space Force. I know that this is going to cost a lot of money, but here's the question. Why is it that we have NASA? I understand NASA is a research and development, but it is not a constitutional program. However, this concept of having a space force, if you understand the roles, responsibilities, and powers that have been delegated to the federal government, they do have a responsibility of national security. The fact is that there are nefarious and actually weaponized satellites up in orbit from other nations. It is important that we actually start sailing ships in the space around Earth in actually trying to protect our best interest and is ensuring that our assets, as well as our people abroad, as well as here in America, are protected. So I would think that if Trump was smart, he would stand down NASA and let Space Force literally take over this, this whole role. As a matter of fact, I wrote an article. Actually, it was to the Senior Staff NCO Academy when I was in the Marine Corps. I submitted my thesis on leadership and what we need to do as a nation, as a military force. We need to consolidate. It boggles my mind, and I put in the argument that there is no need for four separate headquarters. There's no need for four separate structures. Why can't, just like with what HP and a lot of big corporations do, why is it that we can't take the armed forces of America and basically just make them the United States Armed Forces, and with a Marine mission, a Marine time and Marine mission, the Army's mission, the Naval mission, and the Air Force mission, instead of maintaining, this huge structure in D.C. for all of these different generals. And literally, the reason why we have such a large command structure is to give officers a better opportunity to be able to have a career of getting generals and so forth and so on. Well, I don't know why the military is obligated in ensuring we can have as many generals as we possibly can, as well as, enlisted senior sergeant majors or senior enlisted folks. And as a matter of fact, I even challenged in my paper the arcane process of actually having a separation between enlisted and officers. Corporations aren't separated. They have executives at the very top level, but they're not separated between an abyss where you even have anti-fraternizations between officers enlisted at the lowest levels and so forth. There are anti-fraternization rules within corporations. A lot of corporations do that, and I think that's good. But I do have a problem with the fact that we have this arcane need, because one of my friends always articulated this the best. it takes a enlisted to make a sophisticated piece of airplane fly, but it takes an officer to crash it. And supposedly, who is the superior? And the problem was, way back when, 200 years ago, there was a huge education gap between the enlisted and between officers. That's not the case anymore. There is no real good argument of why we have the separations of ranks, or the officer and enlisted ranks. And I think that there needs to be, if we want to scale down and we want to become more efficient and more effective in spending money on the defense system, that would be a great way of doing it. Anyway, I'm at a hard break again, so I will have to be right back after a word from our sponsor. So please stay tuned, and again, I will be right back. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. And I know I probably really didn't touch on this very well, but I think it needs to be touched on again. I'm not sure if you heard, but Joe Biden is actually launching this homosexual family acceptance kind of campaign. I think they use the letter acronyms as that thing grows and morphs and transforms. But the important point of this is now that Joe Biden is trying to create this promotional campaign and trying to normalize homosexuality. And you got to understand, by basic definition, what is the definition of perversion? Perversion doesn't necessarily mean something in a sexual context. Perversion means that it's outside the norm. What does outside the norm mean? Well, it means that less than 50% of a demographic populace or what have you are, you know, members of, participants of, or you name it. That means that it is a outlier or a small minority is what is bottom line of perversion. And so what I find is really interesting, or what's really scary, is the fact that he's supporting this huge propaganda campaign. And so he's obviously really appealing to a very extreme left of the Democratic, and or I should say the extreme left of our demographics. But what's even scarier is the fact that this will grow legs, and the next Democratic president will actually start putting your tax funding, your tax dollars, in promoting and normalizing through social engineering and spending money through campaigns and those types of things to supporting this. They're already doing this in school. You get that? I mean, are you understanding this? That they have been used social engineering tactics in manipulating the population for a long time. And Joe Biden is a huge supporter of social engineering and manipulation. So I think that that just needs to be kind of spoken to and let you be aware of it. So down the road, when we get another progressive president to undo all the things that Trump has done, and if we haven't had the state step in to stop all of it, maybe this will be the marketing in getting you motivated to stepping in and saying enough is enough. You have no authority in doing that. Now, I know that there's probably a lot of people that have already talked about this Abdul Ghani Wajaz or whatever, the guy that got arrested in New Mexico, and the fact that he's Linda Sowers' mentor, political activist. You know, as a matter of fact, Linda Sowers is a darling and a hero based on the Huffington Post. And so the whole point in talking about this, because I know a lot of people are talking about it, but I've seen way too many conservatives take Huffington Post articles and actually start putting them in social media to say, hey, look at this, look at this. We need to just completely ignore anything and everything Huffington Post is doing. Don't go there, because as they receive traffic, as they receive views and looks, it helps substantiate their cause. They just need to be the biggest ignored press in the United States. And as a matter of fact, anybody that comes and represents Huffington Post, if I was a politician or if I was somebody that they wanted to actually interview, I'd say I have no interest in being interviewed by the propaganda communist rag that the Huffington Post is. They have no representation of our ideals. They have no they do not support individual liberty and individual sovereignty and the Constitution as it was created and implemented by our framers. They only support the perverse concepts of subverting it and aggrandizing it to allow them to manipulate and or interpret a living document to use it as they feel fit. Now, another thing that came up that it made me think, because I talk a lot about how the progressives use all sorts of tactics. And a long time ago, I recognized the fact that country and Western music is very patriotic music. Now, who would really hate patriotic music out there? Well, the secular progressives. The secular progressives really, really despise anything that is patriotic. Okay, so if you hadn't heard, this Rascal Flatts concert was abruptly ended, supposedly, and evacuated over security concern. Remember, there was this Las Vegas shooting. And so I understand the concerts are being, you know, targeted, and it's not just country music. But I will tell you that the progressives do look at country music as a real threat. Why? Because they actually use music to help manipulate, as that Melbourne man story that I talked about earlier. They use the media, entertainment industry, and everything they can as tools to help shape your thoughts, to help shape your mind model and paradigm so that you move in the direction they want you to move. And so this country Western music is not moving you where they want you to move. They're actually trying to infiltrate, and they probably have infiltrated it because they've infiltrated most everything. But they're trying to shut off and probably turn down this patriotism out of the country and Western music. And so as you see these things moving forward, I think this is kind of interesting, that you should probably be able to start predicting and anticipating exactly what is going to happen. So, you can probably predict that either country music and Western will start embracing the homosexual movement, they'll start embracing Islam, and they'll start embracing all the political correctness, or there'll be more and more label lynching, whatever you want to call it, going after these folks, which also sets me up for this James Alsup conversation and hopefully moving forward in an interview and so forth. But before I do, I noticed that there's a news outlet that was trying to normalize and humanize these MS-13 members, and they're just kind of completely downplaying the threat. And I think that's really sad, but that's exactly what you get. That's another progressive. This is all marketing, folks. If you don't see this stuff should be infuriating you, that we are being manipulated and that they're using these tools to drive society into a very specific direction. We need to stand up. This is all marketing. And here's an interesting thing that you probably won't hear of. Hundreds of Muslims in Western China are engaged in a standoff with Chinese authorities in preventing their mosque from being demolished because China's had enough of them. But China is a very, very despotic rule. I had a great conversation with Mitchell Gerber. He is the Lionheart. I talked to you about him a little yesterday, and he was talking about precisely what's going on with China, and he basically said that it is the most deplorable, despotic government that has ever been established. And what they are doing, they have this nice happy face, but what they're doing in this organ harvesting. So we're going to have them on Thursday next week, and we're going to be talking about how China has created a big business, and it doesn't seem like they're really trying to make a lot of money on it, but I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to gain affluence in getting states and the elitists to say, you know what, China may be horrible, but shoot, if I need a kidney, that's the place I want to go. And if you understand how they're harvesting these organs from living human beings, they're basically taking them out of political prisoner camps, and they've basically cataloged every single prisoner. They got millions of prisoners, and they have them all cataloged by blood type and tissue types and so forth, so that when somebody comes to China and says, okay, I need a liver, you know, here's all my doctor stuff that tells you what I need, and here's my biological footprint or ID, and then they just look in their database and go, yeah, we got a match right here. And then they literally summons that person out of a prison, and it is literally that horrid. Next thing you know, that person's gone, they burn the remains, and it's over. That's so evil. That is an immoral process that doesn't even equate to how we could be there in this supposedly time of enlightenment and how evil a statist government can be. Remember, I told you that they do not care. They are wired so far over on that ideal of subjugation and slavery and enslavement to the state that they will do anything necessary to meet their needs. And if a part of what they're trying to do in obtaining affluence with other nations for the elite purposes and so forth, in giving you the organs, you would just come here and we'll give you any organ you want. Well, that's how evil they are. And that's exactly what I've been telling you last week. So as all of these things really come together, if you start really looking at the macro, if you start looking even into the details from the macro down, you will start to understand and agree that there are literally these two ideologies. Everything GR here is telling you is absolutely spot on, that there is a hard wiring difference. They're diametrically opposed. Those who have the side of liberty, if you really believe people should be free to choose for themselves, you are the exact opposite, because those people on the other end of this ideological spectrum want to kill you because you are an obstruction in their way. And they will make you a political prisoner and harvest your organs if you live in China. So I know I'm coming up on a hard break. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about this Unite the Right, this upcoming DC supposedly violent demonstration, because I've kind of had a conversation regarding some leaders that are not necessarily behind the Unite the Right, but have a part of a subgroup. And we'll get into that. And I think I'm going to tell you again I was right, but we will be right back after word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so in response to the decades of our education system teaching white guilt and that America and Western society has been the evil of the world, I think it only begged for the opportunity because it had been attracting and had been a great recruitment for maybe the KKK and some extreme right groups. But those groups have become more and more obscure because when one gets out of the rhetoric and one backs out to the macro, there's really very little academic support for trying to, and as a matter of fact, there is zero academic support for our framers and what they installed in trying to create a white nation, in trying to create a nation of white Christians and so forth. Now, I will say that Christianity was a part of this nation, but it was not based on race. And so what actually proves that is if you understand what George Washington and even Thomas Jefferson later on was doing, they were literally trying to incorporate and assimilate the Native Americans, the Indians, into the American society, into our republic. They wanted them to become contributors and full citizens. And Washington wanted to make sure that they were given those opportunities, but they weren't trying to compel them. Again, they were on that Christ side of this whole aspect, or this, I should say, the liberty scale. They were on the side of liberty. They wanted to make sure that people, regardless of their creed, race, culture, what have you, came to the same conclusions that men must be free to choose for themselves and so forth, and to be able to practice their religion freely and embrace this idea of liberty. And so that's one of the reasons why, if you understand the Trail of Tears, the Cherokees and those Native Americans in the South, and it was very specifically in the South, they were actually outperforming and they were doing much better in assimilating into capitalistic society. The first newspaper in the South, I believe, was actually ran by the Cherokees. And I believe that if you look at what was going on, the reason Jackson was the despot and tyrant of the first Democratic president, and he showed his colors of what Democrats would do, he actually, because the Southerners were complaining, saying, "Hey, you got to get these guys out of here. They're gonna beat us at our own game," and so he literally cast them out and had the basically enforced the Trail of Tears, where thousands of Indians died. And so that what Andrew Jackson did had nothing to do with our founding principles, and actually was the antithesis of our founding principles. What Jefferson was doing in trying to actually document, he actually documented the languages. They were trying to assimilate them so that they could actually start working on communicating through written text and so forth. Because you got to remember, the Indians did not have a written language, and he had like over 30 of the tribes documenting their language and their heritage, but their alphabet and so forth. And so it was fascinating how these men were working in trying to assimilate just the Native Americans and the Indians, which means that the concept of individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our founding principles was not one of racism. As a matter of fact, it was, and I've talked about this very several times, that during the Constitutional Convention, the big holdup and the big flare-up was three particular states, because every other state was willing to abolish slavery, period. Every state, except for Georgia and the two Carolinas. And so they basically threatened the Union and saying, hey, if you make slavery a national issue, then, and so they did. There was the 1808 clause that shut down the slave trade and the importation of people into the states. And that's when the states could no longer import people of their own. It fell under federal cognizance. So when you start looking at immigration, federal cognizance is over immigration and the importing of people. That's when the importing of people shut down. So, yes, in the very beginning, states were able to import people without having to go through the federal government. But anyway, I'm going down this huge historical trail, and I don't mean to. The whole point is that there is this organization, it's called Identity Europa, or Evropra, and they're a byproduct of identitarianism, a word that they kind of have extrapolated. Do you consider the unions evil? Do you consider the intent of the unions way back when? Because a lot of people looked at them as, well, you know, they had a good purpose. They, you know, improved the working environment. They used collectivism in doing that. Collectivism is a very dangerous tool. However, there are times when we need to stand up, and we need to stand up for what's right. That's what we did in the Revolutionary War and so forth. So it is kind of a part of American to be standing up for what's right. But unions have gone kind of by the wayside. They've become a very parasitical organization, and at the demise of even the organizations that they are penetrating as well as their memberships. And so they're a self-aggrandizing organization, and they're huge supporters of collectivism, communism, and so forth, because that's why they throw all their money to the left. What do you feel about the NAACP? And I'm just going to use that as another organization, because here was another organization that stood up during the Civil Rights Act, and they, you know, were instrumental in trying to help organize, not necessarily a resistance, but an awareness in standing up for their rights and their liberties and so forth. And I think that there was a necessity for that on both sides. And as a matter of fact, the history of America is just so good. There's so much good in it. But the whole point is the NAACP really relevant? According to a lot of, I would say, black leaders like Thomas Sowell and or Ward Connerly, I do not believe that, and I believe that they would assert that racism really isn't a problem and that those organizations have become irrelevant. But this organization, Identity Europa, is a byproduct of this is what you get when all of a sudden you start teaching white guilt, white hate, anti-white in our education system and so forth. Say, hey, we're not bad. We have just as much right. And as a matter of fact, our history is very important to where we are as a nation and where we're going as a nation. And so there's a lot of relevance to what these guys are doing. And as a matter of fact, there is no sign, as far as I'm concerned, there's no white supremacy. And what you're seeing in the papers in calling these guys white supremacists, there may be Ku Klux Klan, there may be Nazis, but you got to understand there is a huge separation from those who want to use state to enforce separations and to enforce standards, whether that be Black Lives Matter or the Ku Klux Klan, that is still statism. They may claim to be on the right or the left, but they are all on the left. Statism is on that black end of the liberty scale of subjugation. They're not on the side of liberty. And therefore, you will find that they have no place really in being a relevant part of our society. They are a faction, and factions are bad. But what I'm finding out of this Identity Europa is an interesting concept. Now, I don't have all the facts, so I'm hoping as we go through this process, and I'm going to share this with you, that these guys are actually, you know, I think they're hitting a chord. They're actually standing up and saying, quit calling us anti-white, you know, quit being anti-white and quit being anti-American and anti-American heritage and so forth. They're standing up to these destructive narratives that the progressives have been trying to go after. They've been demifying our framers. They've been demifying our laws and our structure of government and so forth, and that isn't good. And so as we move forward and as I interview these guys and start looking in, hopefully, not necessarily, I don't not work with them, but I'm hoping to broaden their paradigm because I believe that they could actually take the moral high ground in this, because if they're really not trying to create equal, what they're trying to do is actually dissolve factions and say, leave our heritage alone. We don't want to destroy your heritage. We believe heritage is important and it's relative for everybody and everything. Going back to the moral high ground, though, you know, when you see all these Chinese that like that or Asians that are being employed by the New York Times and they're putting out all this propaganda. I've talked about this before, and understanding what is going on in China with these organ harvesting and so forth, and they're poking us in the eye. Like as I said, did we invent slavery? Heck no. Did we invent all of these things that were the world's evils? No, they actually came out of Asia. Slavery came from Asia. Ancient Mesopotamia was actually in Asia. It wasn't in Europe. It wasn't in Africa. And so maybe they want to sidestep all of that and sidestep their accountability and responsibility for, you know, starting this whole thing of slavery 5,000 some odd years ago. But the fact of the matter is, we have to grow beyond that. It's not about pointing the fingers anymore. It should be about individual liberty and it should be about individual sovereignty. And that is how we can get back on track. And it is literally leaving these factions, because factions take us and keep us from uniting. If you have a faction, if you're showing up to my camp with a faction, then as far as I'm concerned, you're a divisive person. We will get into Washington on Monday because he talks about this and he talks about the destructive nature of the party. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic. I need your help. Please join us and we'll be back on Monday. God bless. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities.